All right. I also don't have anybody who wants to buy me off, so nothing to disclose there. So we're going to talk about prescription monitoring program laws. I was going to say we're going to talk about in a little bit about Law Atlas and how we use Law Atlas to help quantify and display prescription monitoring program laws. I'm going to do a brief overview of the problem. You probably all are pretty familiar with why we think this is important, but through it briefly. So for me, the important starting point is that prescription opioids are important. They're very useful. They can be, in the right hands, in the right situations, extremely good things. We're also seeing that they can have important negative effects. So over the past, really, 15 years, there's been a dramatic increase in prescriptions for various opioid medications, mainly for the treatment of pain, chronic and severe pain. And there are a number of reasons for that that aren't really important for this work. And concomitant with that, we have seen an increase in these negative effects from increased use of opioids. We've seen an increase in just emergency room visits that are associated with opioids. And we've seen this massive increase in fatal opioid overdose. Depending on where you start and stop counting, up about 300%, give or take, to the point that we're now losing about 15,000, maybe even, probably even more than that, people every year, with the main contributing factor to death of prescription opioid overdose. It's more than heroin and cocaine combined, so it's a serious problem. It's now the leading cause of accidental injury death in the country. So prescription monitoring programs have been put forward by various organizations and institutions as a possible solution to, or at least, a piece of the puzzle in reducing opioid overdose deaths. I can't speak for the research team, I would say a big problem with that is that there's actually absolutely no evidence that prescription monitoring programs actually do reduce overdose deaths. There's only been one we would consider to be a relatively high quality study that even examined that outcome, and it found no significant effect between states that if you have prescription monitoring programs and those that don't, we would say that a big problem with that study and other studies that have looked at the effect of prescription monitoring programs on other outcomes is that they don't have enough data to work with. They're not working with a rich enough data set. They don't have the ability to determine or to look at variations between prescription monitoring programs, both between states at the same time and in the same state over time. And it's just not enough to say, well, this state has a PMP, that state doesn't. Now, again, that's our guess. We don't have any empirical evidence for that either. So we thought, we are interested in the question of whether PMPs will reduce opioid overdose rates, because that's something we would very much like to see happen. So we decided we would go out and create a database, and we went around and looked for somebody who would pay us to do that, and we found Public Health Law Research, who graciously decided, who agreed with us that that was an important goal and gave us the funding we needed to do what I'm going to describe. So last year I came and talked for 15 minutes about methods, much, I think, to the chagrin of many of the people who were in that session and was hoping we would be talking about results. So I'm not going to bore you or go into much detail on the methods today. If you are really interested, you can catch me later. You can go to lawatlas.org, where you can view our complete protocol and code book. Or you can dig up last year's presentation. But Essentially, we did essentially what Sarah described and to some extent what Steve described. We had two researchers independently search for all relevant statutes and regulations in the 50 states from 1998 through 2011. And then we had two actually separate researchers go through and using a code book code all of those laws. We coded 42 questions per state for each state month, right? So for each state in each month, we have an answer to each of those 42 questions. They're just asking about various characteristics of the state of the law in the PMP in that month. And we actually, I would say, we actually started this in the pre-law atlas world. So we actually hand-coded all of this stuff and then moved it into law atlas, which I don't recommend doing because it's extraordinarily time-intensive. So this is an example of, so this is just output of relevant laws for Ohio. And here is, you know, our initial Excel spreadsheet of characteristics of laws. So what did we find? This is the fun part. So, you know, what we found are some things that folks already knew, that the number of states with prescription monitoring programs increased over time. So our snapshot starts in 1998. In 1998, there were 12 states that had prescription monitoring programs, and I would clarify that when I'm going through this presentation, I'm using the shorthand of had PMPs or had characteristics, but really what I should be saying is had laws on the books authorizing or implementing PMPs, or had laws on the books that were instructing the PMP to do this, that, or the other. We didn't actually look to see whether the PMP was actually in operation or whether it was actually operating in conformance with the law, because this is a legal research database. So by the end of our study period, there were 46 states with PMPs. Currently, there are 49. Does anybody know the holdout? Missouri. So here you can see the progression over time. The gray bar at the bottom the total bar is the total number. The black bar at the top it shows you the number of PMPs that came into existence in that year of the studies. You can see it's been a gradual, steady increase in PMPs over time. No big jump in any particular year. So we also looked at where the PMP is administratively housed, who runs it. And it's a little complicated because in a number of states, they actually are housed in more than one agency. But so for this slide, and we capture that in laws, but for this slide, we're just looking at what is the main agency that runs or has administrative authority over the PMP. We found at the beginning of our study period, 6 of the 12 PMPs, so half the PMPs, were administratively housed in a law enforcement agency, either in whole or in part. But from the whole rest of our study period, only 2 states that enacted PMPs after that put them under the authority of the law enforcement agency. So we thought that was kind of interesting to us. Some states put them in health departments. There's actually been this increasing trend to house the PMP with the Board of Pharmacy, sometimes with the Medical Board or something along those lines. And some states put them under the authority of the Department of Health or similar state agency. Another trend that we found was the frequency with which the dispenser is required to report data to the prescription monitoring program. And I guess I just start out by assuming that you all have a basic idea of what a prescription monitoring program is. It's basically a big database to which dispensers who are dispensing prescriptions are reporting the fact that prescription was given to a particular person at a particular time, and the exact details vary. They're on our database as well. But that's what's going on. So at the beginning of our study period, that lag was really big. There was a big lag between the time that the prescription was dispensed and when that data was required to be reported to the central database. So there was only one state that had that required that data to be reported as frequently as weekly. That was the most frequent reporting requirement. And again, we don't know as a practical matter how often places were actually reporting. This is just what the law required them to do. And over half said, you only need to send us the data every month. But by 2011, 60% of states required that the data be transmitted at least weekly. And two states were down to one day or less. And since we, you know, if we were to extend this database, you would see a dramatic shift in this. And partly, you know, partly I'd say that is due to technological change. It's actually a lot easier now. Back in 1998, a lot of these programs were still paper-based. You know, they were actually faxing or mailing this information. Now it's almost all electronic. And you can just see that here. There was almost no change between 1998 and 2005 and since then. And so these are snapshots, 98, 05, and 11. So by 2011, you see this big shift. And if we were to, you know, do this again in 2 years, I think you would see a larger shift as well. You would see a whole lot more states that are requiring daily reporting and almost no states that still permit monthly reporting. We also saw a shift in the number of schedules that are required to be reported. So very broad terms, most states follow something like the federal government's paradigm in which drugs are classified into different schedules, with the lower your Roman numeral number being the more possibly problematic your drug is. And we saw over time that the number of schedules that are required to be reported went up. The original PMPs oftentimes just required the most possibly problematic drugs in Schedule 2 to be reported. And you see, again, a pretty steady progression. These are just the various schedules, 3, 4, and 5. Every state requires Schedule 2 to be reported. And then by now, almost every state requires Schedule 3 and Schedule 4 to be reported as well. So this is a thing that I think is really interesting. We just asked this question of, what can the PMP do with the data that it finds, right? And so we asked this question, is the PMP permitted to, say, proactively identify outliers? Can they go fishing through the data to see what they can find, or are they just responsive to requests? We asked a lot of questions about that, you know, who can ask and what can they ask for and what do they need to show to get data. But just this question about what can the PMP do itself? So you could just see over time that more state PMPs are explicitly permitted by law to do that, you know, searching through the data, looking for possibly problematic prescribers or dispensers. And, you know, so we asked also a lot of questions about, okay, if they're permitted to go fishing, what can they do with the data? And again, we're only capturing what the law explicitly says they can or can't do. So this is just a snapshot from 2011. We coded 26 states as being permitted to go through the data looking for things. So the question is, what if they find something, what can or must they do? And we found that 10 states required reporting of suspicious individuals to law enforcement. That's required. They must pick up the phone or whatever and notify law enforcement. 13 are required to report to the state professional licensing agency, and that's typically only for possibly aberrant prescribing, right? So if it seems like there's a prescriber that's statistically, you know, way off, that's required to be reported to the professional licensing agency. only three required reporting to a prescriber or dispenser, you know, so to say the prescriber, hey, this guy is seeing seven other docs and he's got seven other prescriptions for hydrocodone. There's only three states that require the PMPs report that. None of them require any sort of referral to drug treatment or social services or anything like that. I'm getting the stop talking message. So this is just so interesting to me. There's so much to say about data access. So this is the last slide. So as late as 2011, in the statutes and regulations governing PMPs for five states have no requirement for any showing for law enforcement to access personally identifiable prescription data. At least under the law, they can just call up and ask for it. 22 states require active investigation, and we didn't look at much case law, but we did look to see, is there a case law that says what that means? We couldn't find any. You know, so what is the difference between just being able to call up and get the data and being able to call up and say, we're investigating this guy, can you give us the data? We don't know the answer to that. Only 20% of states require some form of probable cause to access these data. We found very little that explicitly addresses retention and purging of data, which, you know, I'd say is extremely high confidence in that finding, because that could be addressed somewhere else in the law. That's just in specific PMP laws. So there could be some other statute somewhere else that addresses what they can do with that data. So anyway, we found these wide variations among states, and over time we think that they are important, and we think that researchers who are doing work in this area really should take them into account, and they can do that because all of our data is on lawatlas.org. Check it out.
We have questions?
Well, so those are two different questions. The question is, do we find out anything about how data are used by public health agencies, and do they have access? We attempted to answer the second question. Does the law, you know, so we did answer the question, who does the law explicitly permit access to the data, and in what circumstances? Not too many states, I don't know the number off the top of my head, you know, explicitly mention public health agencies. The public health agencies, I think, would say that oftentimes they're not interested in personally identifiable data. They're interested in trend data. And we asked a couple of questions that tried to get at that. So but the slide I showed is just addressing personally identifiable data, which theoretically should be a little tougher to get. We didn't try to address the other part of the question of what, if anything, are they doing with the data.
This is a sort of off data set question. Do you know if organized medicine has opposed the creation of PMPs because they're worried about oversight of people's prescribing habits and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't know if like the AMA has an official position. The few states that, well, there's some experts back there, but the few states I'm familiar with, it seems it's very parochial. It seems very state-specific. And actually, you know, we've heard more about PMPs are going to happen, right? It's more about how they happen that the state medical societies seem to be very interested in. Non-answer.
And that's what they're trying to sort of work out right now.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And that's something that actually, so no states at the end of 2011 required what you're getting at, which is requiring the prescriber to check the database before prescribing. Yeah, and I mean, there are concerns with that.
One more question.
So our state of Utah has had a PMP since 1995, and for a very long time it was very difficult to get access. And then in 2005, when we at the health department worked to get the law changed, the state medical board was one of the few who really actively opposed us being able to use the data for anything. But I mean, we got it through, and we found that over time we're getting more and more access. So that the most recent legislative session, it's now opened up to beyond researchers just in the health department, but that researchers based in universities have more questions about that. So we've seen a lot of movement in a state where people have been incredibly successful.
And you're just to clarify, you're just talking about de-identified data there, right? I mean.
Well, when I first got the data access in 2005, that was completely identified. With everything. Huh.
Yeah, and I'd say that's, I mean, so it's on a lot of us, but that is completely all over the map. I mean, some states seem to assume that the data should be available to researchers, and some states start with the assumption that the data should not be available to anybody. And same with law enforcement. Some states seem to assume that, of course, anybody with a badge, even if he's a game warden, should be able to call up and get data on anybody. And other states seem to assume that, well, of course, you need a warrant for this data. So it's...